Hey everybody, this is Jet from Sick Drummer Magazine, and today we have with us as our guest a drummer who many of us know from his past work in Soil Work, and of course now he's a drummer for Megadeth. But today we're going to talk a little bit about another band he's taken part in called Cadaver. The man is Sick Drummer Dirk Verburen. Thanks for being with us today, Dirk.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So, for those that don't know, Cadaver is a band started by Anders, who plays bass in Satyricon. So, Dirk, tell us a little bit about the band and how you got to know Anders and eventually end up on this band in the new album.
Yes. So, it all started back when I was a teenager.
Wow.
Believe it or not. So, I listened, of course, to a lot of extreme metal back in the mid to late 80s and happened upon the Cadaver record through a friend who bought it and played it for me. And this is Hallucinating Anxiety, the band's debut album, which came out, I believe, in 89 or 90. Mm-hmm. And so it really stood out to me at the time because of the crazy intro, the tuba intro, which is just completely weird and shocking, and just the very extreme sound of the whole thing. You know, it was a very raw, primal record. And from there on, I was sold. I became a Cadaver fan and followed them throughout the years through, you know, different incarnations. The band existed on and off. I even saw them live in the early 2000s. Got to see them. And fast forward to 2014, I'm asked to fill in on drums for Satyricon, playing a couple of shows on the 70,000 Tons of Metal cruise where I was already performing with Soil Work. And as I'm, you know, I fly to Florida, to Miami to go get ready for the cruise and have a quick rehearsal with the Satyricon guys, because this was all kind of last minute. So they flew in from Norway also at the same time, and we're very jet-lagged. Anyways, I didn't realize that Anders from Cadaver played bass with Satyricon at that time, even though I'm a big Satyricon fan and followed them and stuff. So I got a chance to sit down with Anders and tell him how much of a Cadaver fan I am. And from there, he said, you know, I've actually been working on some demos on and off throughout the years. Like, whenever I have an idea, I just record it. Would you be interested in hearing them, and what do you think? So he played a few songs for me, and I was like, yeah, man, this is killer. We should totally do something with this. So that's how the idea began to resurrect Cadaver a third time, or resurrect a second time, I guess. That's kind of how it began.
Well, Anders mentions that you are a one in a billion drummer, and how honored he is to have you. Yeah. So what's it like in turn for you working with Anders? One in a billion, Dirk.
Well, he's way too kind, first of all. But I thank him for saying that. That's very, very nice. I mean, it's wonderful for me, you know. Anders is just one of the people that it, you know, influenced me so massively when I was a kid, and thanks to who I'm a drummer today. You know, it's all those people. It's, you know, I can mention many people. Dave Mustaine is another one. You know, Mitch Harris and Shane Embry from Napalm, that same thing. And those are all people, you know, Devin Townsend in later years, very important. Those are all people that I got to work with, you know, many years later and now, and it's amazing. And when it comes to Anders, we just had such a, you know, immediate and natural connection. You know, we bond over the same kind of silly humor. You know, obviously our musical tastes are similar in many ways, because a lot of what he did and what came out during the years where he got inspired also inspired me. So it's just been, you know, he's a friend first and foremost, I will say, and we became friends on that cruise and stayed friends and stayed in touch. And so the you know, making music together is almost kind of like a natural extension of that in a way. So it's just a very very organic and very fun and very natural process. And there's no drama, there's no bullshit. It's just, you know, we're just having fun. And, you know, if there's any ever a good way to make music, that would be the way.
Now, for this album, I know a lot of these songs were kind of accumulated by Anders writing throughout the years. So how did you contribute in the writing process of this album, Dirk?
Yes, that's true. he would send me ideas, and you know, a lot of times they would be not just like one guitar riff or two guitars, but they would be structured ideas, and I would sit down with him here in my home studio and put drums on them. And a lot of ideas were just me kind of, you know, doing what I hear. And as Anders will tell you too, you know, he would hear one thing and then I would send him something completely different than what he envisioned. But a lot of times it worked. So that was great. There was also been times where, you know, on a few of the songs or a few of the parts here and there where I would say like, maybe we should change this part, or maybe we could add something like this here, or, you know, just kind of giving my feedback on the song. So it became kind of an interaction between me and him on what we both felt was the best, you know. And that actually went on through the studio session as well, because we decided to record together, him on guitar, me on drums, and just jam the songs as we recorded them instead of doing the typical, you know, separate instrument recordings that are common nowadays. We wanted to have the vibe of people playing together, that old school death metal vibe. That was very important to me specifically, and Anders wanted that as well. So the songs kept evolving there as well. You know, we would play something and be like, you know what, maybe this part's a bit too short, or maybe this part's a bit too long, or maybe this song needs another riff. Let's see if we can come up with something, you know. So until the last minute, the songs were, you know, alive and breathing and evolving. And I think you can hear that on Edder and Bile, you know, that approach where the music is a living thing, and we're keeping it alive. We're not trying to sterilize it by, you know, putting it on a grid in Pro Tools and you know, nothing against that. I mean, in many cases that could work fine, but I think death metal needs to have a certain rawness and primal feeling, a certain aggression that is best obtained, in my opinion, by keeping things organic.
And now, when was this all completed with all this stuff that's going on in the world here?
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, everything was completed pretty much last year. We did a couple of recording sessions. Anders came over here to Los Angeles in the beginning of 2019. That's when we recorded most of the record. Okay. Then he came back again later that year because we felt like we should have a few more songs. And he had some ideas, and we felt like, you know, maybe some of the songs on the album could be stronger. So a few things were discarded. A few new songs were recorded in a separate session. And that's pretty much when it all came together. So the music has been ready since 2019. And it's just been a matter after that of, you know, finding a record deal, planning everything. And obviously everything got pushed this year because of everything that's going on in the world and the pandemic. And so normally the album would have been out already. But, you know, and there, the band would have been on the road touring probably. Oh. But obviously, you know, that's not just us. I'm not lamenting it in any way, because we're all facing that. Mm-hmm. And we're some of the lucky ones, you know. I mean, even though the music industry has been hit especially hard, we're also very lucky because we're able to, you know, many of us to keep working from home. Like in my case, I have a lot of loyal drum students who have been, you know, who have been helping throughout this time. I keep having session work and stuff. So, you know, it's also a blessing, because a lot of people just straight out lost their jobs and became, you know, got into very difficult situations. So even though it hasn't been easy, you know, I think we're still fortunate.
Now, your playing on this is a little bit different than what you play in Megadeth. Is it nice for you to like play a variety of styles and music with various bands?
Oh yeah, I mean, to me, it's something that I've enjoyed early on. It's taught me a lot of things to do that, because I think when I was starting out drums and when I had my first band Scarve, you know, I was working very hard at developing, obviously, my identity as a drummer and just learning drums in general. And I found myself stuck sometimes. I found myself in a place where as soon as I was taken outside of my comfort zone, like things I was playing with Scarve or some other bands I was in, I kind of wouldn't know what to play. And, you know, I would kind of be afraid that what I was playing in those cases wasn't good or wasn't inspired, or, you know, I would just have that feeling of like, you know, this isn't comfortable, right? And so over the years, working with different people, having this, you know, the fortune to have so many cool bands and musicians ask me to work with them, and all these, you know, recordings I've done, helping people out live when they needed somebody. I mean, you grow tremendously from that. And I certainly have. It's given me a lot of confidence in my drumming. it's given me tools to deal with specific situations. Like, it's a very different thing to, you know, for example, with Anders, you know, to have time to just kind of work on songs until we feel they're ready and then record them the way we want to. That's a very different thing than, for example, how we met, which is me filling in at the last minute for Satyricon, having 2 days to learn like 16 songs with specific drum parts, and then flying over, you know, to the cruise and playing them the best I could with almost no preparation, you know, and with like one quick rehearsal with the band. So just to give you an idea of how, you know, how vastly things can be different. And it's all just, in the end, it's all just me playing drums, right? So it's the same thing, but it's just, you know, there's a world in between that. And so playing with different people, to get back to your question, you know, is just something that keeps me on my toes. It pushes me to, and it has pushed me to find tools to deal with all kinds of different situations and different personalities. And so in the end, it makes me a better drummer, you know, and I think that's the most beautiful thing about it.
And now the album called Eder and Bile, consisting of what, 10 tracks? Now, did this album pose any like challenges at all, whether it be, you know, in recording or writing or any of the process going through making this?
Let's see. Well, I mean, it was definitely brutal in the studio, because since we played, you know, entire songs versus, you know, me just sitting down and recording drum parts and being able to maybe be like, oh, okay, let's stop here and let's take that again. I mean, we pretty much for all the songs, I think maybe with one or two exceptions, we played them all the way through a bunch of times to have a good take or two, you know. So it was definitely intense physically, because as you can tell from the record, it's not exactly children's music. It's
not quite, no.
Intense. Yeah, pretty intense drumming. So I remember being, you know, I remember it pushing me to the limit, and Anders kind of laughing because I was like getting exhausted and stuff. So, but other than that, it was a very smooth process. Him and I just naturally feel music in a similar way. And so even though our ideas would sometimes be different about how things should be done, there was never a single fight. It was all done in good spirits and good fun, and you know, neither of us take this extremely seriously either. I mean, this is death metal, you know, let's remember, you know. So I think sometimes it's a nice break away from the seriousness of our main band that can be jobs in a way, you know, and that become jobs. So just have something where you can just kind of do what you want to do and express yourself and have fun with it.
Now, for people that haven't heard the album yet, what could they expect when listening to this? I mean, you know, it's like we had mentioned earlier, the band's been around for a little while, a couple of different lineup changes, but this one is really brutal. So tell us a little bit about what people can expect when they listen to this album, Dirk.
Yeah, well, I think Anders' guitar riffs are very recognizable, and actually the album opens up with a song called Morgue Ritual, which is based on a riff from all the way back in 1988 that the band wrote for one of their demos, but it was actually never properly recorded. I think it was a song that they had rehearsal tapes of, and then when they did their demo recordings, they decided not to record that song for some reason, which I told Anders not too long ago. I was like, I'm so glad you guys never recorded that, because now we got to use those killer riffs. But so it's really, you know, it starts kind of with a connection back all the way to the beginning days of Cadaver. And I think you can really hear that in his riffing. And other than that, I mean, it's really just our take on how the band should sound in 2020. You know, as you said, there's been different lineups. There's been a different sound to the band. So definitely production-wise, I think this one is more up to snuff than some of the earlier stuff, you know. But when it comes to the style of the music, I mean, it's death metal through and through, like 100%. And I think people who are into that kind of music and who like death metal the way it was born, with this primal energy and just this, you know, this almost falling apart at all times kind of feeling, but just super high energy. I mean, they'll love the record, because that's what I hear in it.
Now, when tracking for this album, what was your drum setup, Dirk?
So I had my Thomas Star Classic Birch Bubinga for this one, but I purposely kept it pretty simple. So I only used 2 rack toms, 1 floor tom, and then, you know, of course, 2 kicks and snare, but And when it came to the cymbals, I also took away some of my crashes. I play minor cymbals, but with Megadeth, I have four crashes at all times. And with Soilwork, sometimes two, I'd have three or four. But for Cadaver, I decided to just use two because I just wanted to keep the kit kind of straightforward, like the music. You know, I didn't want to overcomplicate things. I didn't think it was necessary. I did have a couple of splashes and a hi-hat on each side, which I usually do. But other than that, it was a pretty... It was a little bit of a stripped-down version of my usual drum kit.
Now, you had mentioned that you've been keeping pretty busy during the pandemic and lockdowns with, you know, some drum lessons and stuff like that. So when you're home, Dirk, what is your typical home practice like? Like, what do you do to kind of keep those chops up and build your endurance in between shows?
I wish I had a good routine, but I don't. I really should, but it's pretty much, you know, it changes all the time because it's dependent on what I have going on. Usually what ends up happening is that I'll have some kind of recording or I'll have a drum video that I need to do, or, you know, that was like the one of the most recent things is I have to go in and record a couple of drum videos. So that's when I, you know, 10 days before or a week before or whatever, I go in and I'm like, oh, gosh, I have to get my chops back up. I have to get back to, you know, being able to actually play this stuff. So, you know, a lot of times when you're home, what happens is you get, you know, a lot of different things need to be taken care of. And, you know, you don't end up necessarily spending as much time behind the drums as you want. Right. So it's kind of on and off for me. But this being said, when I do practice, I do a lot of hand technique and foot technique exercises, which are kind of my routine warm-up things for the stage as well. A lot of single strokes, double strokes, rudiments. And I just push the tempo, really. It's something that I've especially adopted recently after talking to Kenny from Aborted and Yana Yaloma from Dark Funeral, who are two drummers I really look up to. Two super fast and technical drummers and also mm-hmm. super cool guys. So I actually took lessons with each of them and when I got a chance to be around them and stuff and just kind of pick their brain on how they work on their extreme speed, because those guys play like 300 BPM, 320 BPM, whatever, just crazy, crazy tempos that are like, you know, in my wildest dreams I couldn't keep up with. So I've always been a big fan of speed and blast beats and the technique that goes with that. And so I just picked both of those guys' brains. They were really cool and, you know, really helpful. And so they taught me that, you know, one of the things to do is just kind of do it, you know, just kind of stop worrying about, oh, when I play this tempo, I can't really keep up. Just put the metronome there and figure it out. So I've been doing a little bit of that, you know, a little bit in my practice routine, like kind of applying those lessons learned from those guys. And it's been helping, I have to say. I think a lot of when you're trying to achieve something new and just doesn't just go for speed, there are some mental blockages that happen, you know. It takes you back to that confidence thing again that I was talking about earlier. Sometimes you just got to do it. You just got to let go of whatever fears or apprehensions or thoughts you might have and just be like, F it, here we go, you know, let's try. And yeah, it might not work right away and it might not even work 3 months in. But if you keep trying, you know, eventually you'll get there. And that's kind of life, isn't it?
Absolutely. Pretty much summed it up right there, right? It's like the more you go on with life, the more you just got to take a chance. And the more you don't get as scared to take chances anymore, you know? It's like, well, what's the worst that could possibly freaking happen, you know? I'll still be alive tomorrow no matter what the frick happens today, hopefully, right?
Yeah. No, that's it. That's exactly it. It's about just letting go of your fears, I guess, and just, you know... And after all, when you're practicing your instrument, it's just you usually and your instrument. Nobody knows how bad, you know. Luckily, nobody can see how bad I play when I'm practicing.
So we're going to just got to ask you a couple quick little Megadeth-y questions here, too. So, I mean, the last time I talked to you personally, Megadeth, you weren't even nowhere near that. You weren't even in that. Wasn't even nothing on the radar screen or anything. So how long have you been with them now, Dirk?
So it's been over 4 years now, actually, because I started the first shows, if I remember correctly, were in May of 2016. So, yeah, it's running on 4.5 years soon.
So far, so good?
Yeah, so what? Sorry, I have to do it.
So, yeah, it's doing great. So, look, of course, we hear all over the place now, Megadeth working on a new album, and your drum parts are already done. That must be a relief for you.
Yes, definitely. We you know, it was a while in the works. We actually were working pretty hard on the songs last year. Kiko and David and I went over to Tennessee, where Dave lives, and spent several months there working on songs together and ideas and just developing kind of the ideas that were already there. And so, you know, the plan was to record not long after that, but because of Dave's cancer treatment, which was kind of taking over his world at the time, and then subsequently, you know, him having to take the time off to rest from that and kind of heal up, and then the tour we had earlier this year just before the pandemic hit, I mean, it just threw a wrench into everything, all that stuff. So, and of course, there were all things that needed to be dealt with, and we're all very fortunate and happy that Dave, you know, got through his cancer and healed up and got better, and that we got to do this tour in Europe in early 2020, just before the pandemic, and make it through all that unscathed somehow. You know? That was all like just crazy timing, and so cool to see Dave back, you know, in full shape doing what he does best. And but yeah, and all that, the album kind of got pushed back a lot. So finally, late May, early June this year was when David and myself went back again to Tennessee, went into the studio and laid down all the rhythm tracks for the record. And it's been in the works ever since. Kiko has been over there recording his guitars. Dave's been working really hard on it. I don't know exactly where it's at, but I think he might be doing vocals soon. So yeah, it's you know, it's been a long process, but it's looking good.
And what could we expect? I know you can't really say a lot. Hey, what can we expect from the drum parts of this album? You can say that much, at least.
Yeah, I can maybe talk about that, sure. Because honestly, I don't know what the album is going to sound like as we record it. And I don't even know which ones will actually be on the album. But anyway, when it comes to the drums, you know, I'm very fortunate because in the 4 years that I've been in the band, we obviously did a lot of touring, especially, you know, 2016, 2017, up to a good portion of 2018. And that really gave me time to become intimately familiar with not only, you know, the songs, but also the drum parts and how every drummer that's been in the band, whether it's Nick Menza, Gar Samuelson, you know, all the other drummers that we played songs from, how they, you know, perform those songs and what their little quirks were and their little ideas, because obviously I don't need to spell this out, but they all did things their own way, right?
Sure.
And I really try to, when I'm on stage with a band, I really try to honor that. So of course I'm me and I can never be Gar or Nick or Chuck Beeler or whatever, but I you know, I still try to, like, you know, do those songs justice and do the drum parts justice. So a lot of research went into kind of really understanding how they play. And the good thing about that is that when it came time to finally record drums for this new record, I had all that knowledge, and or at least, you know, that my knowledge was way, way stronger than it would have been if I would have just joined the band and jumped in the studio straight away. So I was able to kind of take some of those ideas and just kind of blend it all together in a big blender with my own taste and bring it out that way. So I tried to, you know, honor the legacy of Megadeth basically through my drums, and every song is different. Every song, of course, has its own, you know, things that it needs and things that work and things that don't work. But this being said, there was some, you know, we tried out some different things even in the studio. Dave was, of course, there when I was recording, and he would suggest things or I would suggest things. How about we try this? And so I was very happy to see that it was such a cool creative process, you know, that it wasn't just like play this, you know. It wasn't that at all, actually. There was a lot of, you know, liberty to try things, and sure, not everything worked, so sometimes I was like, yeah, no, never mind that idea, go back to how it was, you know. But at least we were feeling things out, and I think it's really going to show in the record.
So what's it been like for you personally to be touring so much with a band like Megadeth?
I mean, it's been really cool because, yeah, it's taken me to a lot of places I hadn't had the chance to go to before. I'm thinking especially of Latin America, and, you know, that was a lot of fun, especially because the band has a lot of great fans there. It's really you know, it's just really wonderful playing there. I mean, people are so awesome and the shows are just great. And I mean, just in general, of course, you know, huge stages, big productions. I mean, it's exciting to be a part of all that. And Megadeth being a band I grew up listening to, and I actually, one of the earliest bands I saw as a kid live, because I think it was my third concert ever, was seeing Clash of the Titans.
Oh, wow.
Over in New York. I lived at the time, and that was in 1990. So to be able to, you know, now, like, be a part of that is just, it's crazy, right? So I still, you know, even all these years in, now it's been over 4 years, but I'll still pinch myself when I'm on stage, like, wow, I can't believe it's me here behind the kid.
It is awesome. So Dirk, changing the subject just a bit here. Earlier this year, we lost a close member of the drumming community and a personal friend, as you know, to Ian and Anton. And of course, we're talking about Sean Reinert. And I remember when I was talking to Sean at one time and how excited he was. I guess you moved in next door or something. And he was like, oh, it's so great. And we do this together, whatever. So, you know, what could you tell us, you know, your personal feelings about Sean, both as a person and a drummer?
Oh, well, man, yeah. I mean, Sean is just, you know, I have to say, first of all, that his drumming, and especially on the albums Human by Death and Focus by Cynic, were hugely influential to me as a young drummer, because I really thought, and which many drummers and musicians and fans will agree, he really brought something different and new to the table. You know, I think unwillingly, because he wasn't necessarily trying to do that. Mm. He just kind of revolutionized metal drumming and really kicked things up a few notches to where everybody else, you know, had to be like, whoa, okay, we're doing this now. All right. You know, we're bringing in like all these amazing jazz fusion influences and ghost notes and splash cymbals and just, you know, the super creative drumming. You know, so that's when it comes to the music. You know, Sean was a visionary, and he was somebody that, you know, he just loved music with all his heart. Like, he was very passionate about his music and about just groovy drums. He wasn't too interested in the rock star lifestyle and, you know, being famous and all that. That wasn't him. He was a very down to earth guy. And it's just been, you know, I mean, now, of course, looking back, it's crazy that, you know, my wife and I had the blessing to meet Sean and his husband, and just totally, like, naturally became friends and just started hanging out and, you know, spend many, you know, late nights together just laughing, and, you know, whether we would watch a movie or play some, you know, board games or whatever, just having fun. And a lot of the time wasn't even spent talking about music, because Sean kind of had his musical world and I had mine. And of course we talk about things like, hey, what are you working on and stuff, but it wasn't like, you know, we sat there all day long or all night long talking about that. It was more, we were just, you know, in a way, cut of the same cloth. You know, my wife instantly loved both of them, and so we just all became friends. And you don't think about something like that is just going to end out of nowhere. So when I got the call, actually, my wife, you know, Sean's husband, Tom, my wife was one of the first people he called when he, you know, and Sean had passed, and I was at the time actually on this tour I mentioned earlier with Megadeth in Europe earlier this year. And so I got a call in the middle of the night of my wife crying, like, you'll never know, like, what happened, like, Sean passed away. And I'm like, what? And it was just the biggest shock, because I had spoken to him a couple of weeks before on the phone and he sounded great. And, you know, it's shocking. I mean, I still haven't fully dealt with it, to be honest. It's still something that I struggle to grasp, but one thing I'll tell you is that he was an absolutely wonderful human being, and that we miss him dearly, and that, you know, it really kind of reminds you of, you know, how every day is precious and every day is important, and you should never take anything for granted, any people being there for granted, any cool stuff you get to do for granted, because you don't know when it all gets taken away. And in Sean's case, it was an untimely death. He was super young. He was healthy. Nothing was wrong with him. It just, you know, it just happened, and it's terrible. My heart is broken over it.
Well, Dirk, thank you so much for joining us today. We love what we hear from Cadaver, whose new album, Eter and Vile, is out in November. And stay safe, and we wish you, of course, all the best in all your endeavors.
Thank you so much, Jet. This was great, great chat. I look forward to being out on the road again with Megadeth, hopefully next year if all goes well, and see all of you again, and enjoy music together.